CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Welcome to Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Dutetra.
Oh, mama, I can hear you crying. You're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows.
Call Nancy Dutetra now.
248-545-SOUL.
And welcome in, everyone. New Sky Radio and the Para X Network. It is Hot Leads, Cold Cases with your host, Nancy Duterte. Now, each week here on the show, we bring you a new and fascinating guest. This week, of course, will be no exception, and we will let Nancy talk all about that in just a moment. If you got a question or a comment for the show tonight, go ahead and give us a call. We've got open lines right now. We've got 248-545-7685, 248-545-SOUL. And I've got a couple of online options for you as well, just in case you can't get to the phone, you're shy, you're at work, whatever the case may be. Instant feedback right at the homepage of newskyradio.com. Can't miss it. Type out your question or comment for us. We'll address it live on air, just as if it were a phone call. And everyone over in the Para X chat room, that's another great way to send a question or a comment through throughout the show. Remember, you can find Nancy away from the show. And that's at theskepticalpsychic.com. So, we'll find out what's in store for us tonight. Send it over to your host, Nancy Duterte.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brandon. Welcome, everyone, to Hot Leads Cold Cases. Tonight, I'm actually bringing back a wonderful guest, Dr. Lori Nadel, who was on the show earlier this year. She's back for a very specific reason. She's here to talk about the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Sandy and its devastating effects on the New York and New Jersey coastlines. Lori is a psychotherapist specialized in post-traumatic stress disorder, and for the last year has been running a support group for Hurricane Sandy victims. She herself has been a victim. Her house was destroyed, and she's battled with the insurance companies, the government disaster relief agencies like FEMA, and also the banks to try and regain some sense of normalcy in her life. But Lori is a fighter by nature. She always seems to rise like a phoenix from the ashes, just as things start to look their bleakest. Lori was a journalist at CBS News, the New York Times, and other venerable institutions for about 20 years, when she suddenly had to interrupt her career due to a debilitating onset of chronic fatigue syndrome and adult onset asthma. That's a mouthful. She went on disability for 2 years, but not to be defeated. Lori began studying neurolinguistics, meditation, windsurfing, and she earned 2 doctorates. She became a therapist and wrote 2 books, one of which is on a topic very close to my heart, the title of which is Sixth Sense, Unlocking Your Ultimate Mind Power. At any rate, I'm very glad to have Lori here, and we're going to be doing a little retrospective, which is actually very timely right now, on Hurricane Sandy, and talk about how we all move forward from this 1 year later. So welcome back to Hot Leads Cold Cases, Lori.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show, Nancy.
Absolutely. Totally my pleasure. So here we are 1 year later after Hurricane Sandy, and it's all over the news again. I've seen this on virtually all the channels now. Everyone's talking about the recovery and how we've made progress in putting our collective lives all back together again. And just to give a little recap for anybody who either isn't in this neck of the woods or doesn't remember this, Hurricane Sandy hit the east coast of the United States almost exactly a year ago at the end of October 2012. It was a Category 3 hurricane with winds up to 115 miles an hour. It killed directly and indirectly 285 people, and it was the second costliest hurricane in U.S. history. It was dubbed Superstorm Sandy because it hit 24 states from Florida all the way up to Maine. But the worst damage, I happen to know this, and I know you know it, was done in New York and New Jersey, where we both live. And it caused $65 billion in damage. So you've been like a real warrior trying to keep Hurricane Sandy at the forefront of people's minds. First of all, this happened a year ago, and most people, I think, probably kind of assume that it's old news. You know, it's been repaired, and things have, by and large, returned to normal. Is that true? Or is there actually a different underlying reality to this?
It's true that that's the perception that people have. People think, and this was true even after September 11th, you know, that one year later, you know, the pictures that you see show people going, you know, getting back to their lives and buildings being rebuilt and, you know, storm debris having been cleaned up. So, doesn't have the same, you know, kind of mega catastrophe look that it had right after the event itself and the first few months after the storm or after the attack in the case of 9/11. But when people's lives are shattered and everything that was part of the fabric of normal gets ripped away in less than 24 hours, it leaves an impact, it leaves an imprint, both on the individuals who suffered losses, direct losses, of which I am one, and the community at large, which includes, you know, your town, your county, your region, the coastline itself. And in this case, interestingly enough, it's much more of an economic catastrophe that's hitting more than a million people who happen to be primarily working people, middle-class people. Most of the areas that were hit were not wealthy communities like the Hamptons. And so people who worked very hard to have their property close to the coast or on the water or have a boat in their backyard, these people's lives have been completely ruined. And so the impact of that, as people struggle to try to put the semblance of their lives back to order, it has a deeper and longer impact, is what I'm trying to say, than the media images would like you to think. And I know that's kind of a long-winded answer. But the real damage is not to the buildings. The real damage is to the heart and the soul of the people who live in these coastal communities.
Right. Thank you for clarifying that. So it's really the emotional damage or the emotional scarring that's continuing, whereas, you know, a lot of the rebuilding, I guess, has already come back. But I was sort of curious to know if you think that the media has sort of created this nice, happy myth that, you know, everything's being rebuilt and everything's hunky-dory again.
Well, the politicians and the media, you know, kind of don't want a lot of scrutiny about the backstory. The backstory is that probably the majority of people, we're talking about a million people, I would say probably more than 50% of people will ultimately lose their homes or go bankrupt, develop serious physical health problems, both in terms of, you know, the immune system becomes depleted when you have to deal with large amounts of stress for long periods of time, or the shock of finding that you're not going to get the funds that you need to rebuild your home. There's a loss of safety. There's a loss of control. There's a loss of a lifestyle. So these are not necessarily visual stories. So it's very easy, in Long Beach, New York, where I live, we're very fortunate that the city did get federal money to rebuild this beautiful boardwalk that runs for 2.5 miles along the shore and is kind of the showpiece of the town. And it is magnificent. And the new boardwalk has been done beautifully. But it was also done with an eye towards getting good media coverage so that, you know, people will come here and it will help to restore the image of the town is, you know, we've rebuilt and we're better than ever and everything is fine and everything is not fine.
Well, actually, we rebuilt our boardwalk here in New Jersey also along the coastline and then it burnt up. So it was almost like, oh my goodness. I mean, how much worse can this get? It just keeps, whatever it is, it's like bad karma just keeps coming back and coming back.
Exactly. No, it's interesting you say that because I'm running a support group now, a free support group in the Long Beach, New York City Hall in the courtroom. And one of the themes that comes up for people over and over again is it just feels like there's a dark cloud that kind of hangs over the coastline, and people just keep running up against, you know, obstacles and miseries and difficulties and hardships. It's like the energy field along the coast has shifted. And about a month ago, I happened to be driving about 2 hours east of here, but I was in the middle of the island, not along the coast. And as I was coming back, I was driving over the marsh to get over to this barrier island, and there was literally this huge dark cloud that was hanging right over the barrier island, so you could see it as you were driving here. And I thought, God, that really does look kind of ominous and symbolic. But that is how people feel, and that is what people are running up against. They got screwed by their insurance company. They did not get assistance from the federal government, or they were turned down for Small Business Administration loans. But when you get an SBA loan, then the government becomes a co-signer on your mortgage because they basically take out a lien on your property so they can repossess your home if something happens and you're not able to repay. There are contractors that committed fraud. In my case, the water mitigation company attempted to commit fraud, but I hired a lawyer to fight them. There's a lot of corruption, local corruption, and there are people who make promises and, you know, they take people's money, homeowners' money, and then they disappear, or they do work that's not up to the current building code, and then they vanish, and it's one hardship after another for people. And as I said, the hardship doesn't show up on camera very much, but people are struggling to hold on. Businesses, a lot of businesses that kind of made it through the summer, but, they're probably not going to make it through the second winter. And, you know, this is also a community where people have lived here for 4 and 5 generations, and they grew up here. They went to school here. Their kids and grandkids got married and settled here. It's a place where people have very deep roots to the community, and they don't want to have to leave. So people are living in half-finished houses or incomplete houses or houses where they have a new kitchen, but they didn't get enough money to put up sheetrock around the walls. And then some people have just raided their 401ks and their pension funds or borrowed money from family members so that they can rebuild. And so what you see are little tiny beach cottages that are abandoned because probably about 40% now, I would say, of people in this community and probably other communities along the coast have not been able to return. So you have these houses that are abandoned and literally falling apart, and then you have empty lots, and then you have giant bulldozers, and you have cement trucks. And so it's kind of a cross between a war zone and a construction site.
Yeah, pretty grim. We got to take a quick break. Stay with us, everybody. This is Hot Leaves, Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Dr. Lori Nadell.
Are you on a journey of introspection, self-discovery, and balance? Matteran Home creates handcrafted home accessories that awake your intrinsic wisdom, guiding you towards your own peaceful and complete place. Until January 1st, we are offering 15% off all engraved medicinal candles. These are all soy wax candles, hand-poured into recycled engraved glass vessels, using essential oils, medicinal oils, and prayerful intentions. Matteran Home wants to support and encourage you to connect with all that you are. Go to MatteranHome.com and use coupon code BALANCE15 for 15% off all engraved candles. Again, MatteranHome.com, MatteranHome.com. May the objects you touch also touch you.
How the hell do we wind up like this? Why weren't we able to see the signs that we missed? And try to turn the tables. I wish you'd unclench your fists and unpack your suitcase. Lately there's been too much of this, but don't think it's too late. Nothing's wrong, just as long as you know that someday I will.
Radio's The New Sky. The Sky.
We're back. This is Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte. Call Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-7685.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Hot Leads, Cold Cases, and my guest tonight, Dr. Lori Nadel, and we are talking about the after effects 1 year later of Hurricane Sandy. And so, Lori, you were saying that you were kind of giving this very vivid description of, you know, what life has been like for you living on the, I guess, the southern coastline of Long Island and Long Beach. And
yes.
It sounds sort of like a little bit of a nightmare scenario, but I have a question for you. You know, everybody, I think, kind of makes a comparison between Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Sandy. And I know you think this was a bigger story than Hurricane Katrina, which was a bigger hurricane. It was a Category 5, and it happened in 2005, and everybody kind of knows it hit New Orleans very hard, along with several other coastal southern states. And it was the fifth most deadly hurricane ever, and it was the most costly ever at the time. And people remember it, the storm surge knocked out the levees over New Orleans, and it flooded a lot of the city. And it seems to me, overall, you know, if you compare cost, Katrina beat Sandy. It was $108 billion to $65 billion in terms of costs. And it also beat Sandy, if you want to put it that way, in terms of fatalities. there were 1,833 compared to Sandy's 285. Why do you think that Sandy is a bigger story in some respect?
Well, I think it's a bigger long-term story because the economic impact to a million or more people who were affected here is going to be devastating for a much longer period of time. And as I said, you know, the physical damage was in a more concentrated area, and here it was more spread out. But I think we, you know, the difference is also a bit of a socioeconomic difference. You know, Katrina, a lot of the houses were not well constructed, and the walls blew out, and the roofs fell apart. And so the damage here may not look as dramatic, although it is, you know, pretty dramatic. But, you know, we're talking about people losing everything that they worked for. And many of them will never recover. They'll never get back on their feet. They will end up, you know, they will end up losing their homes. You know, there are people who are starting to report, you know, job loss because of illness, because some of it is psychological shock. Some people aren't able to cope. They had to take too much time off work. They're going on disability. And in terms of the number of people hit and the geographic area, I've had two FEMA officials tell me that they'll have a presence in this area for at least another decade.
Yeah, so how does that make you feel? Reassured?
Well, nothing that FEMA does makes me personally feel reassured. I can say that from my own experience. But it does say that, you know, that this, it's as though Hurricane Sandy was the opening scene in a disaster movie, or it's the first chapter in a book. And you think, okay, the houses are flooded. In my case, or in my neighborhood, the tide receded. When the tide receded, it turned out that the town's sewer pump had broken during the storm surge, and so there was raw sewage in everybody's houses and the gardens. I mean, you had sludge, you had fecal matter. I mean, it was toxic. It was dangerous. It smelled horrible, and you know the houses were unlivable, and people had to scramble, you know, to find friends or sublet apartments or find someplace else to go. And many of these people have not been given what they need in order to rebuild their homes. So they're scrambling to pay their rental every month as well as their mortgage. We're talking about working people. We're not talking about people who have, you know, like half a million sitting around, you know, in their 401k that they can just, you know, kind of, they can raid that. And, you know, I give you an example. Governor Cuomo started this program called New York Rising. And New York Rising is a federal funding that is supposed to provide grants for people who did not get enough money from their insurance or from the federal government through FEMA or the Small Business Administration to rebuild their homes. Now, if you were ordered to knock down your house and build what's called a FEMA compliant house, which is kind of up on hydraulic piles or stilts, so that if there's another flood, the waters can rush underneath the house and the ground floor becomes your carport, your storage area, and all your electrical and plumbing fixtures are up on the second floor. Some people are building towers that go up, you know, three and four stories. But it costs $11,000 to knock down, say, a little 1,000-square-foot, 1,200-square-foot beach bungalow. And when people show up to New York Rising to look at what assistance they can get, they're being offered $5,000 for the demolition. And when it's explained, you know, to the Cuomo representatives, the state representatives, well, that's fine, you're giving me $5,000, but it costs $11,000. They're told, well, we expect the homeowners to kick in, and we expect the homeowners to, you know, to provide some funding. And I know many people who have had to say to, you know, the New York State people, well, you know, I don't have $6,000. I mean, I've maxed out my credit cards in the last year, you know, paying for my children's eyeglasses and my children's clothes for school and school supplies and, you know, unreimbursed medical expenses. And, we, you know, we're in a hole. We don't have $6,000. So there, and then the response is, well, we have to make sure that everybody, we have enough money to give to everybody, but they're not giving everybody, you know, each homeowner isn't getting each homeowner who qualifies and who needs the assistance isn't getting sufficient money to even take care of the phase one demolition that needs to happen so that they can either sell their lot or they can build a new home. Well, so it's craziness.
Are you, and, you know, I totally understand that if you've lost everything, then it's pretty hard to be expected to kick in for, you know, major, not just renovations of a house, but a total construction of a house.
People don't have it.
Yeah, because people don't have it. But, you know, by the same token, I mean, are you expecting it like a full, to be made whole, like a full reimbursement on your losses? Or do you think it's fair that people ultimately be expected to kick in or get loans or do something to kind of, you know, allow for the fact that, yeah.
Well, people are trying to get, you know, of course, everybody, pretty much everybody I know went through the process, applied for the SBA, the Small Business Administration loan. You know, people have taken out personal loans. I mean, people are hustling to get funds however they can. But the socioeconomic, you know, story here is that many people no longer have access to more, you know, they can't take on more debt. They're putting three kids, you know, two working parents. One's a New York City teacher. The other person is in, working for the police department or the fire department. They're putting three kids through college. They're already carrying as much debt as they can handle. They can't handle more debt. So there's only so much that people can do. People are kind of at the breaking point financially and they don't have it. So even though, you know, if you paid $6,000 a year, as many people have told me, they had three different policies on their home. They had wind damage, they had homeowners, you know, for fire, theft, vandalism. I added earthquake coverage since there was that big earthquake last year that did have a ripple, a little bit of an aftershock here in this area, the one that started in Virginia. And then you have your flood coverage, and which is actually administered through the National Flood Insurance Program. So it's a government-insured flood program that is serviced by individual companies like Travelers or Liberty Mutual or, in my case, USAA. There wasn't enough money in the flood insurance program pockets or coffers for the insurance companies to be able to pay out to the subscribers or the people who've been carrying the policies. They weren't able to pay people sufficient money to be able to even get some of the basic work done. For example, you know, if you're paying $6,000 a year in insurance and you're paying it for 25 years and you have a storm and it's going to cost $120,000 to $150,000 for you to rebuild the inside of your one-story house. And you have an insurance adjuster from Kentucky who comes in and says, well, in Kentucky it would cost $27,000 to fix up a house like this. And the insurance company says, fine, we'll send you a check for $27,000. Now, in this area, $27,000 will get you a heating system, which
a ham sandwich and a cup of coffee.
Right, you know, a heating system, an electrical system, and a few pieces of sheetrock. You know, it won't get you a full bathroom and a full kitchen. I mean, you can't do anything with it. So, you know, if you're somebody who's working and you're a single parent or you're a two-parent family and you're putting your kids through school and now you have to pay rent as well as your mortgage, how are you going to come up with $100,000? You probably, you know, have maxed out or you're pretty close to maxing out your credit just to make your monthly, you know, mortgage payments every month and to keep up the insurance on the property for which you weren't properly compensated. And a lot of people have turned to an attorney in town who's been working with an advisory team from New Orleans to learn how to file suit against these individual insurance companies on behalf of individual homeowners, so that they can get, you know, some of their costs reimbursed.
Yeah.
That they need in order to continue.
Yeah.
So
that's going to be a tough road to hoe legally, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But we got to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to speak to you about some of the work that you've done in your support groups for a lot of the victims of Hurricane Sandy. So everybody stay with us. You're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Dr. Lori Nadel.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Hello, baby, hello. Haven't seen your face for a while. Have you quit doing time for me? Or are you still the same spoiled child? Hello, I said hello. Is this the only place you thought to go? Am I the only man you ever had? Or am I just the last surviving friend that you know? Harmony and me, we're pretty good company. Looking for your heart and let your feelings flow. You're not lucky knowing me, keeping the speed real slow. In any case, I set my own pace by stealing the show. Say hello. Looking for an island in our boat upon the sea. Harmony, gee, I really love you, and I want to love you forever. And dream of never, never, never leaving harmony. Never leaving harmony. Harmony.
CBS Radio's The New Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries.
Back to Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte.
You're hot and you're cold, yes and you're no. You're in and you're out, you're up and you're down.
Call Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-SOUL.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases, and my guest today is Dr. Lori Nadel. So what I did want to talk to you about, Lori, is some of the work that you've done working sort of psychologically with some of your neighbors and people in, I'm assuming it's mostly in your town of Long Beach, which I think, if I read correctly, it's got a population about 33,000 And 30% of those people, only 30%, have actually moved back into their homes. And I'm assuming that the people that you're counseling are in their homes. Is that right?
Some of them have just gotten back into their homes in the last few weeks. Some of them are renters who are kind of moving around in various places. And there's one family that has been displaced now for over a year. In fact, two families have been displaced for over a year. And they cannot begin to do the demolition on their homes. I think that, you know, the first 6 months after a catastrophic event, and it could be a car accident, it could be, you know, being present or witnessing a crime, it could be being the victim of a crime, it could be a natural disaster, it could be a plane crash, any kind of catastrophic event really shakes the core of your being, so that whatever sense of safety you had, whatever you expected your life was going to be, is completely shattered. And so you develop tunnel vision, because you have to make survival decisions that are critical, sometimes life and death decisions, sometimes very critical financial decisions, at a time when you're in shock and you're under stress, extreme stress. You're standing in the middle of your house, your phone isn't working, you know, you have to somehow report to the insurance company that your home was destroyed, or you have to find a place to live, or you have to find somebody who has a car that's working, so hopefully you can get your car, your cell phone charged, because there's no electricity, you can't plug your cell phone into a light socket, and this goes on. I mean, it goes on for months, and it's very frightening, and you kind of develop, as I said, a kind of tunnel vision, which kind of gets you through the first stage of shock.
Yeah.
And you're kind of in survival, and I've been asking people in my group to think back to the past year and to try to make a list of all of the decisions and choices that they've had to make since this storm, or even getting ready for the storm, and to realize that, you know, you as an individual have accomplished so much more than you ever thought you were capable of. Because you've had to continue to be thinking and making these critical decisions under extremely trying circumstances, and it's important that you acknowledge that, because otherwise it starts to feel overwhelming and kind of helpless. So you go through the first 6 months and you're really running on kind of sheer adrenaline.
Yeah.
And you're kind of running on empty. And then at about 6 months, what frequently happens is the deeper emotions start to come up in terms of flashbacks and nightmares and anxieties, and people started to have dreams about the ocean coming up and swallowing them whole, kind of like an archetypal Grimm's fairy tale kind of mythic dreams that people were having, that the ocean developed giant black hands and it would grab them when they were coming to get their mail, and all of these very deep, visceral fears begin to get kind of stirred up, along with very vivid memories of water kind of, you know, invading your house and filling up your house and destroying everything, you know, around. And so the deeper feelings begin to come up at about 6 months. And that's very often when people do one of two things. You know, they come in to talk about what they're experiencing and the fears that that these nightmares and flashbacks are bringing up. But most people just try to shove them aside, because you still have to survive. And so, you know, you kind of stick it in a drawer and you go, well, you know, this isn't time for me to be scared. It's over. It's not going to happen again. I'm going to be fine. And you just kind of keep going with one foot in front of the other. And you get through it. Not without a lot of complicated emotional turmoil, anger, frustration, despair, sense of lost opportunities, a loss of safety, loss of control. You see the community that you loved is no longer, you know, the kind of place where you could live without locking your doors. And that's one of the reasons I stayed for as long as I stayed. It was unbelievably safe. It was like a little Norman Rockwell, you know, piece of the universe where you could leave your car unlocked and you could leave your home unlocked and you could bike down to the ocean and come back an hour later and, you know, your screen door could still be open and, you know, you never thought anything of it. In fact, you almost kind of took that kind of safety for granted, and now it's gone. And so in the reptilian brain, which is the old brain of patterns, habits, and routines and safety and territory, it says, this is my block, you know, this is my home. This is my favorite chair. You know, this is my bed. You know, when I'm at my kitchen table, I feel safe. When I'm watching TV, you know, and I'm sitting in my my easy chair, my lazy boy, I just get this warm sense of safety. All of that is gone. It's just gone. And you kind of start to kind of try to plug in the voids and the empty places while you continue to do the work of whatever it is you need to do, dealing with contractors, dealing with government, dealing with banks, dealing with insurance companies, dealing with people who are, you know, making mistakes that may be due to ignorance or may be due to malice or may just be, you know, because the system is really very broken and a lot of things go wrong from a systems administrative or bureaucratic or organizational point of view. And you can spend 7 hours on the phone, you know, with people trying to get them to put down the right forwarding address. I mean, it's just staggering the level of endurance that you need to kind of get through something like this. And then the one-year anniversary comes and all the media goes, oh, we're going to have these ceremonies and these rituals, which we had some that were very beautiful. You know, made a human chain along the coastline and the media helicopter came and, you know, we're still here and we're building and we have a sense of connection to each other and all of these things are true. But there's an ocean of grief inside of you that doesn't begin to come out. It doesn't begin to manifest until the second year.
Yeah. You know, I actually listened to an interview that you had done with some of the people from your support group on
yes.
the radio station. And the whoever the host of the show was started to ask one of these members of your support group about, you know, it was a fairly basic question, I thought. And she started sobbing. And I thought, oh, my goodness, she's totally, totally traumatized. And still in that place, I think that you're talking about where, you know, having feelings, you can't really have them because it's a luxury. And you can't really afford to have them because if you get too emotional, you can't do
right.
what you have to do like a soldier.
Right. You can't allow yourself to be vulnerable. And yet, you know, this woman's a young mother. She has, you know, she and her husband have a four-year-old daughter and a two-year-old son who has autism, and they're living in very cramped conditions in her parents' house. And this little house that she had, very similar to my little house, that was her dream. You know, it was her dream to have a you know, small house and this very friendly community where you didn't have to lock your door, and, you know, there are lifeguards on every corner, and all the kids, you know, learn how to swim early, and they learn how to surf, and, you know, there's just this, you know, there was just this flow to the way of life, and she can't get back into her house, and she doesn't have the money that she needs to knock the house down and build, you know, what they're calling a new FEMA-compliant house. She received very little, you know, maybe less than a third of what she needs from her insurance coverage, and, you know, she's devastated. And, you know, I think I'd mentioned the last time I was on the show that I had spent 10 years going back and forth to South America and studying with shamans and indigenous healers in the Andes and the Amazon and in Brazil. And one of the universal models that shamans from any part, any region of the world, Siberia, Ireland, Africa, South America, Native Americans, there's a universal model of something that happens when you lose a dream. They say that when you lose a dream, you lose a piece of your soul. Mm. A piece of your soul breaks off because the overwhelming loss is too great for you to endure, and it's like a piece of the self breaks off, and you kind of lose that part of yourself that believed in that dream. And then everything kind of, as I said, it kind of, you develop this very small, kind of tightly focused tunnel vision, and you put one foot in front of the other, and you just kind of, you know, you take it, you know, one phone call and one application at a time, but inside, your heart is broken.
We got about 30 seconds before we got to go to break again, but I'm curious to know, does anybody ever fully recover from that kind of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yes, actually, I think the studies show that one-third of people will kind of have intermittent flashbacks from time to time, and they'll recover, but, you know, it is something that can come back. It can be triggered by those wonderful anniversary images they show you on TV, or can be triggered years later by a smell or by, you know, a music. That's kind of classic, like, combat PTSD that you read about. A third of people will never recover, and a third of people will go on to use this as a kind of springboard to transform their lives and to create something more meaningful out of their own lives. Yeah. So that they can look back and say, wow, that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, which is a great way to look at challenges and obstacles, if you can, because that's not easy. Anyway,
well, it takes a while to get there.
Yes, it does. Stay with us, everybody. You're listening to Hot Leads, Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Dr. Lori Nadel.
Are you on a journey of introspection, self-discovery, and balance? Mattern Home creates handcrafted home accessories that awake your intrinsic wisdom, guiding you towards your own peaceful and complete place. Until January 1st, we are offering 15% off all engraved medicinal candles. These are all soy wax candles, hand-poured into recycled engraved glass vessels, using essential oils, medicinal oils, and prayerful intentions. Mattern Home wants to support and encourage you to connect with all that you are. Go to MATTERANDHOME.com and use coupon code BALANCE 15 for 15% off all engraved candles. Again, matterandhome.com, MATTERANDHOME.com. May the objects you touch also touch you.
It's
CBS Radio's The New Sky. The Sky.
We're back. This is Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Dutertra. Call Nancy Dutertra now.
248-545-7685. Believe.
Welcome back. You're listening to Hot Leads, Cold Cases, and my guest is Dr. Lori Nadel. And we've been Hurricane Sandy 1 year later, and what effect it's had economically and also emotionally. And I think it's really interesting, some of the emotional explorations that you've been able to do with these people who have gone on this sort of horrific journey with you. In Long Beach and in Long Island, New York, where your entire community was sort of decimated. And the idea that people can, or you're saying about a third of people, can figure out a way to heal themselves, to sort of take the bad experience somehow, even if it's still bad, but turn it into something that they find useful within themselves. Is that something that you're working on with the people in your support group, or are they not there yet?
I think people in my support group have tremendous courage, tremendous resilience. There's one young woman who lost everything. She was living in a basement rental apartment, and about 4 months later, she began collecting furniture and prom dresses and kitchen supplies and cleaning supplies. And she put together a free flea market for people in the surrounding towns who had lost everything. And we got a parking lot, or she obtained a parking lot, and storage units were donated, and people came, and I think we had over 600 people came, and they picked up everything from brooms and mops and Clorox and to toiletries and things that we don't, paper towels and kitchen chairs and cutlery and children's clothes and sheets and bedding, and then she put together a medical supply lift for the tornado victims in Oklahoma. And I think that, you know, she has definitely kind of tried to use this to transform her own experience of loss by helping others who are going through catastrophic losses themselves. I think that that's clearly, it's partly what my professional experience is. I've been doing work with people who've had traumatic losses now for more than two decades. So I think I understand what some of the phases and some of the cycles are. And the first kind of line of defense, if you will, or the most basic way of helping somebody who's had a traumatic experience is providing information about, you know, what it's like to kind of, you know, wake up every day with your head reeling from shock, or, you know, to have knots in your stomach, or to not be able to sleep, and to understand that, you know, your life has just been completely turned inside out and upside down, and that you are a normal person having normal reactions to an abnormal situation.
Yeah.
And so it's to help people normalize, and right now to help give people some coping skills and social support, because what happens after a few, after a couple of months, at first people are very sympathetic, and they want to come and help, and they want to help you clean up your home, and they don't understand that you've hired professionals to do that. You certainly don't want people, cleaning out raw sewage. It's not something you would invite somebody to partake in as an experience, I don't think. But there were a lot of volunteers who were helping people to clean up and clean out at the beginning. And then after about 2 months, people in general tend to kind of want to tune it out. It's like, oh, gee, well, it's Thanksgiving. You should be thinking about the holidays and be grateful for the fact that, you know, you're still here. And that's true. There are things that you are grateful for after a mega event like Hurricane Sandy or 9/11. But that doesn't mean that, you know, that your psyche hasn't been ripped and shredded in a number of different places, and that you're still, you know, very bruised and very wounded.
Yeah.
And so the support group, you know, creates a safe place for people to talk about, you know, things that trigger them and things that upset them, or things that they're able to cope with, and things that they're having, resources that they're trying to find that they can share with each other, and to basically build a network of friends who will be there for each other, you know, in down the road in the future.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
Yeah, I do think that is very important. And it's funny, too, because, you know, even in my neck of the woods in New Jersey, and I'm way inland, so we didn't have the water issues, but we certainly had, you know, I had plenty of friends and neighbors who had huge trees go right down on top of their houses and slice the houses pretty much in half, or, you know, roads that were blocked up for months. And we had no electricity for a couple of weeks, and I was sitting in my house and 30 degree weather, well, it wasn't weather, it was the inside of the house, it was 30 degrees, it was cold. And there is a point where it turns your concept of reality upside down. And
right.
I think the one thing that got me more than anything else, and this might sound crazy, but when I couldn't get gas for my car for 2 weeks, and I tried, believe me, I sat on those car lines for sometimes 5 hours at a time, and they'd close up right before I got there. Or you wouldn't have enough gas to drive you to the place where you needed to go. That was frightening, and I'm still a little bit, in my own weird way, traumatized by that.
Well, that is a big trauma. One of the freedoms that, you know, we as Americans take for granted is freedom of movement. And we're not used to shortages. And so I think we really need to begin to kind of study the values and the mindset of people who live in third world countries, where they have to endure shortages of water and electricity and gasoline and, you know, heating. And, you know, they've lived with natural disasters and wars and epidemics and famines. And over the years, they've developed strategies for resilience that we're going to need in the future, because I think that there will be more episodes like this, whether they come from natural catastrophes or political crises that involve the oil supply system. It could be any number of things, but we're living in a time of storm and fury, and we need the mental and emotional and spiritual strengths to not feel so personally deprived when these things happen, because I can tell you, we all, including myself, feel like, oh my God, this happened to me. This wasn't supposed to happen to me. How could this happen to me? It happens to everybody. It's just life.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I have to ask you probably the most politically incorrect question here, but, you know, everybody is thinking it. So why would people want to continue to build on the coastlines, and should they be permitted to? We got about a minute, unfortunately, before we have to end, but maybe you can give me a quick answer to that.
Well, I think it depends on how close to the coastline you actually are and how solid the soil is underneath you in terms of whether you should be allowed to. But people are drawn to the water because the ocean calls you. It's like a spiritual connection that people have to the ocean. So it's like it calls you. You know, you don't say, oh, I think I'd like to go here. It's almost like a metaphysical pull.
So should we all be, as a country, willing to pay for the metaphysical calls of people drawn to the ocean wanting to build there?
Well, I don't think people expect, you know, government handouts here. People do expect that if you pay into your insurance policy, that you're going to be fairly compensated. And I don't think that people, you know, and this is why I was saying it, most of the people who've been hurt here are middle class people. They never asked for handouts from anybody, and they're really not expecting, you know, the government to pay for everything. But if they were not treated fairly by the system that they paid into for 25 years, then, you know, that raises other questions about, you know, what is our society made of when it comes to providing assistance when people are in need?
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think that sort of boils down the whole issue, is that it feels as if people have not been treated fairly in this circumstance, and that's got to be addressed. If people want to get a hold of you, Lori, how would they do that if they want to find out more about your support group or how they can help some of the Hurricane Sandy victims? How would they go about doing that?
You can contact me through my website, which is laurienadel.com. LaurieNadel.com.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
You know, getting this important information out. I think it's a good thing.
Great interview. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good night, everybody. See you next week.